This is Emergency Medicine Match Advice, sponsored by Academic Life and Emergency Medicine, a podcast series designed to help medical students and residents strategically navigate the process of applying for residency in emergency medicine or to EM-sponsored fellowship programs. I'm your host, Mike Gisanti from Stanford University. Let's get started. Welcome to Emergency Medicine Fellowship Match Advice, a Google Hangout web series sponsored by your friends at Academic Life and Emergency Medicine. And it's editor-in-chief, the most disruptive human force in medical education, Dr. Michelle Lin from UCSF.
What? Hello, hey. Michelle. Hey, neighbor, bestie from the Westie, who's now just down the street at Stanford.
Check out the like red banners. All right, Michelle, I'm going to call this season two of Fellowship Match Advice. This is our first spin-off series of the original, very successful series from ALEM EM Match Advice. In season one of Fellowship Match Advice, we tackled ultrasound, medical toxicology, and medical simulation fellowships. But today, we're going to be talking about PEM. Today's topic title is EM Match Advice for Pediatric Emergency Medicine Fellowships. To offer their sage advice on matching to a PEM fellowship, we have three outstanding PEM fellowship directors: Dr. Maybelle Koo from the Altieri Pediatric Emergency Medicine Fellowship at Inova Fairfax Children's Hospital. Hi, Maybelle.
Hello there.
Dr. Paul Ishimini from University of California, San Diego's Rady Children's Hospital. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
And finally, Dr. Peter Auerbach from Oregon Health Sciences University, Randall Children's Hospital. Thanks for joining us, Peter.
Thank you.
Let's just jump right into the discussion today. We're going to turn to our first panelist, Dr. Koo from Inova Fairfax. And what I want to understand, Maybelle, is why would anyone do a PEM fellowship, especially the EM-trained resident? What special skills can someone expect to gain from PEM fellowship training?
Well, Mike, funny you should ask that. That's one of the questions we usually ask our applicants. So it's kind of a laugh internally when they respond, well, I really like pediatrics because that's sort of a given. A strong interest in peds is a real plus. And many of my fellows have always had a special interest in peds. And for some of them, fellowship was about learning how to take good practices back to the community. And I had a few who actually had been out in practice for a few years and then came back. But that's not the norm. I think the quality of pediatric patient care in the emergency department in the community is especially dependent on good practice and expertise. So that's one reason to do a fellowship. Others, it's about education. Some of them just love to teach. So half of them have gone into academics, and we've got a few program directors out there who studied at this program. And some of them have gone on to be the PEDS specialists at a general emergency medicine program. So there's many reasons to go into it, and not just because you like kids. In fact, one of our grads actually went to a chairman position fairly soon after graduating. So there's lots of leadership opportunities. And as for skills, well, you have extra time with PEDS patients. You get to hone your teaching skills, and a lot of PEDS emergency medicine is communication in general. You get to do QI, simulation, disaster, all of these umbrellas underneath pediatric emergency medicine. The last thing is you may be leading teams of people who are not familiar with pediatrics, and you have to guide people through that experience. So lots of strategies to explore. Do you have anything to add, guys?
No, I mean, I think traditionally people have gone from the emergency medicine route into pediatric emergency medicine fellowships with the idea that we're going to start off and be the peds person kind of in an academic program, you know, especially from the EM side, you know, you'd be the peds person within the Department of Emergency Medicine. But really now, I think the opportunities, as Mabel mentioned, to kind of participate in a lot of different settings is really kind of superseded kind of the primary academic interests of most of our applicants. So it's really kind of wide open in terms of why people go into pediatric emergency medicine. But and that's largely related to the number of opportunities are available when you're done.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to get to jobs in just a second. But, you know, Maybelle, when I was a program director for quite a long time, I would get applicants to the program and sitting in the interview, and they'd say, you know, I really couldn't decide if I want to do peds or not. So I think I'm going to do EM because I don't want to stop caring for adults. And then I'll do a PEM fellowship later. And I always thought, well, that's just never going to happen. There's no chance you're really going to do that, right? But then obviously you're telling me there's a subset of people that that truly happens, that that their clinical interest in pediatrics is enough to push them for fellowship training.
Absolutely. And it's actually becoming more rare, but I think it's because of mentorship and actually having contact with people who trained in emergency medicine first. So I don't know that the perspective is the same from both the specialties, although at my place, we definitely train people who've been through a pediatric track and through the EM track. So that's just one thing I'd like to point out, that it's a really wonderful opportunity if you can have it. And so for applying, I think in terms of structure, it's really only 2 years, which sounds like a horrendous amount of time for someone who's in residency. But when you reflect in another 10 years time, 2 years is really nothing. And you get the extra board certification. So there's lots of advantages to doing it that people may not think about. But in terms of, I think, structure, SEEG program, well, most of them are accredited. So you want to stay within an ACGME accredited situation. I think there are very few that are not. There are a couple of new programs coming up, and you want them to be linked to a program that's in good standing. For emergency medicine grads, the typical length of training is 2 years, and that includes 12 months of ED experience, 4 months of pediatric experience, and that can include ICU. It can include the floor clinic, and you want to have some experiences in radiology, anesthesia, NICU, and forensics, child abuse, things like that. So most of the time, the EM-focused fellowships are going to be more clinically heavy. But remember, the non-clinical requirements of the fellowship are equally important, so such as administration. And there's always room to take a few electives. Now, the caveat is that there are some programs that are set up only to take people for 3 years. And that may sound like a bit of a turnoff, but they build in time for research. There's time to perhaps have exposure to other things. And it does sound maybe a little bit unfair, but at the end of it, it's 6 years, and our pediatric counterparts have to do for six. So if you think about it, it's not that bad.
So that's an important point. So there are two-year programs and there are three-year programs. The majority are which?
For emergency medicine trained, most of the programs are 2 years.
Are 2 years, irrespective if you come from a three-year or four-year residency program. And then for pediatrics, do they do 2 years or do they do 3 years?
They are required to do 3 years because there's a one-year scholarship requirement from the American Board of Pediatrics, which brings us to the other thing. Each specialty will board their own. So as an EM grad, you are going to be boarded by the American Board of Emergency Medicine. And if you're from the PEDS track, the ABP does your board certification. So,
but they're a combined board. One's not better than the other. They're the same.
No, it's dual leadership, dual board. Right, Paul?
Okay.
That's correct. You know, so in fact, I sat on and I chaired the combined American Board of Pediatrics / American Board of Emergency Medicine, Pediatric Emergency Medicine Subcommittee. And it's structured such that there are four representatives from that are appointed through emergency medicine and four that are appointed through the American Board of Pediatrics. And so we all meet, we set the same standards for the graduates. They all have to take the same certification examination. So really, at the end, you know, the graduates, regardless of whether they initially started off in emergency medicine or pediatric emergency medicine, regardless of whether they went to a two-year program or three-year fellowship program, are really held to the same kind of academic standards at the very end.
That's very helpful. Paul, let's stick with you, and I want to talk jobs. I used to advise residents in my prior job that fellowship training to me in many subspecialties was much like a PhD, right? So if you go to get a PhD, it's because you really want content knowledge in a particular domain. And you couldn't imagine your life without that knowledge, without being a specialist in that area. And perhaps you won't make any more money with your PhD or with your fellowship, but you get to do something different, a different job. So I want to hear all about the job opportunities for PEM fellowship grads.
Yeah, so the job market for PEM graduates is actually quite good. As we said at the very beginning, initially, I think most people kind of go into this thinking that they are going to be the PEDS person within the Department of Emergency Medicine. And certainly there are many jobs like that. I think pediatric emergency medicine is a relatively new specialty. And so there's, I think, a lot of academic growth associated with a relatively new subspecialty. But with that being said, you know, as pediatric emergency medicine, as there are more pediatric emergency physicians that are now boarded, I think that is really kind of spread into the community. And so now, you know, many general hospitals will market themselves as having a specific pediatric emergency department, you know, and I think many of our graduates, you know, we've traditionally had, at least at our program, we've had all of our graduates kind of start off in academic programs. And as of late, we've probably had about a 50-50 split between people who go into academics and people who go into a private practice group. And whether that is a PEDS person within a general EM group or a part of a PEDS group that's kind of contracting out to other hospitals, I think there's certainly a lot of job opportunities as. And they're primarily clinically focused. I think certainly people do things on the side, like consulting or serving as EMS directors, but I think largely it's clinical practice.
Yeah, I think probably you know, residents who are considering fellowship can get their head around what an academic attending looks like, right? They teach in the medical school, they teach in residency. Perhaps there's a division of PEDS and a fellowship. Perhaps there's just that PEDS faculty member. But I'm really curious more about the day-to-day life of the community PEM-trained provider, right? If you're the PEDS person in a community group, my guess is there's got to be a lot of administrative tasks that go along with the clinical. You're not just only seeing kids and nothing else.
In fact, when you go into an academic job, you really get into those, typically not necessarily the only person within that group. And so you get kind of pegged into a subspecialty kind of area, whether it's education or clinical operations. When you are in the community, because there aren't as many pediatric emergency physicians that are practicing in the community, you really kind of shoulder the responsibilities of almost like a division director. And so that entails not only overseeing the clinical care and providing the QI and the PI of kind of those clinical operations, but that also deals with a lot of the administrative responsibilities that go on with being functionally a division chief, you know, kind of trying to argue for your supplies or additional staffing or ancillary staff training. I think that that is a role that you also have to embrace as somebody who works out in the community. The other thing, too, is that as a fellowship training subspecialist, whether or not you're going into a traditional academic role, your role really is to teach. And it may not necessarily be residents or medical students, but certainly the nurses, the ancillary staff, EMS, really your colleagues within the hospital. There's a lot of teaching involved, even when you're in a what's described as a private practice. So I think if you're going into a community job, really there's much more of a kind of a rounded exposure that you need, both in terms of clinical care, but also administration and education.
And obviously, if you're at a children's hospital, you're exclusively seeing children. Would you say that PEM grads who are in the community are only seeing children in their particular shots, or do you think they widely see adults as well?
I think that that varies, but it also goes back to the idea that if you come to fellowship training as an EM-trained person, it really affords you a lot more flexibility, especially within the private sector. Because you have that flexibility of kind of working in a pediatric emergency department and working in the general emergency department, seeing adults as well, you know, most of our fellowship applicants train in pediatrics. And so when they're finished, they have a limited career path in the sense that, you know, if you're working in a pediatric emergency department, you're not going to be able to take care of an adult with an MI. You know, and so that affords, you know, the EM graduates really, I think, are afforded a lot more flexibility that way. And I think it varies. And the nice thing about this job and because the market isn't so saturated with EM/PEM trained physicians, I think you have a lot more flexibility in kind of dictating how you want to practice.
I think you're quite attractive, actually. You can, you know, most of my EM trained have had multiple job offers and opportunities. So that's been really great. And especially if you are in a community hospital that has a side-by-side PTD, even better, because you can really work on either side. And sometimes you need to get away from the big babies and go take care of little ones and vice versa. So it's a nice thing.
Well, you know, you think about some of the combined programs that we have, you know, EMIM, if you were to make sweeping generalizations that certainly don't apply to everyone, you will, in the generalization, see that probably more people practice EM in the end, right? I mean, this is one of the common notions about those combined programs. And I wondered, do the EM to PEM folks abandon their adult practice for this new training, you know, much like the EMIM folks really just kind of abandon the IM half over time?
Most of the EM PM people that I know really divide their practice. And I think I'm an exception just because I ended up in an academic position. So some of your time has to be spent wisely. So I do less adult shifts now than I have previously. But it's something that I do miss. And life is flexible. So I think you have flexibility that if you wanted to do more, you can go back to it in the right environment.
Yeah, I think it really does vary. So in San Diego, we have two or three people who trained in emergency medicine and did PEDS, EM, who are exclusively seeing kids. We also have some of us do a 50-50 split as well. So I'm on the main emergency department side, the general emergency department side, and I do half my time in the children's emergency department. We have a couple of people who moonlight at our hospital who work in general hospitals and do two or three shifts in the pediatric emergency department. And again, they're afforded that flexibility because they trained initially in emergency medicine, so they can kind of work in a general ED and then kind of come in and do their moonlighting shifts in our pediatric emergency department. So I think there's a lot of flexibility there in terms of how you want to split your practice.
All right, well, why don't we switch gears again? And Peter, I want to hear all about the process for applying for a PEM fellowship. So give me the timeline. The application obviously has a match because this is an ACGME fellowship. Give me all the deets.
Yeah, so I think compared to some of the other emergency medicine fellowships, it's relatively straightforward with pediatric emergency medicine. As you mentioned, we use the match and we use the electronic residency application service. And so applicants can go online to a variety of websites looking for fellowships they're interested in, like the EMRO website. There's a nice map and they can look for the geographic area they're interested in. And applications can be submitted through ERAS starting in July. And I know for our program, we start to review the applications in end of July, beginning of August. And we aim to do all our interviews in September and the beginning of October. And then the rank list closes for the match November 29th. The actual match day is December 13th. So it's all fairly organized through in that regard. And I think it's worth emphasizing the point about pediatrics versus emergency medicine trained applicants, which we brought up a little bit already. I think that the latest data I have through the match is for 2015, but there were 201 total applicants. And something around well over 90% of those were pediatrics trained. So there's the emergency medicine trained applicants for PIM fellowships are very much in the minority. And so we, and probably a lot of other fellowship programs, sort of look at the applicant pools a little bit differently. For example, we get about 60 applications each year for the one spot that we offer. And we have about four or five EM applicants and the other 55 are pediatrics trained. And I think that I'm speaking from my own program, which is based in an emergency medicine department. And my co-director, Rob Cloutier, and I are both emergency medicine trained, so we certainly have sort of a particular interest in emergency medicine applicants, which I think the other people on this panel do as well. And so we look at the two applicant pools a little bit differently. I think that's very useful information for potential EM applicants to understand. And so I think out of the 60 applicants that we get approximately each year, we interview three or four of the five EM applicants, and we interview about 10 of the 55 pediatric trained applicants. And again, that's because of the sort of difference in our background interest and the fact that our program is based in an emergency medicine department. I also think that some of us have a particular interest in encouraging emergency medicine trained folks to go into the field of pediatric emergency medicine. I do think that when the subspecialty was originally devised as sort of a cooperative venture between pediatrics and emergency medicine, the idea may have been that there would be more of an even distribution in the training background of people going into the field. And for a lot of reasons, many of them being sort of practical, that just sort of hasn't turned out to be the case.
How many programs are there?
There currently are 73 programs, according to the 2015 match results. Yeah, 73 programs for a total of 162 spots. And it is quite competitive in general. I think the main reason it's quite competitive, and by competitive I mean that 2015, only three of the 162 spots were not filled. And I think that's because there were so many applicants from pediatrics. And as I mentioned, there aren't that many from emergency medicine.
And the unmatched applicant, that number is not small. There's several that
get about 20% of the applicants don't match.
Would you say those are more peds or more EM?
I don't have data on that, but I would guess pediatrics. Maybelle, what do you think?
I think you're right, but I'll secondly, it's getting more competitive, especially if you're talking about 60 applicants for one spot.
How many interviews then do you recommend an applicant tries to get?
Well, you know, I think that's a really good question, and I guess I would say that depends on the applicant. because what I have noticed, due to the fact that it's relatively easy to apply to many programs at the same time because of the electronic residency application system, some people apply to 15 or 20 programs all at once. And I think a really strong applicant, especially if they're interested in a specific geographic area like West Coast or Pacific Northwest, probably doesn't need to apply to a huge number of programs. We've interviewed a number of people who have applied to only one or two programs, and I know for a fact that they've matched.
I would say, too, though, some of the folks who are applying for purely geographic reasons, sort of limited in the number of places they can apply to, but I honestly think they're better off applying to a few more than they think necessary. If they truly want the training, things will work out. So here's the other thing that Peter might not have mentioned is that the one element of confusion surrounding applications is actually finding the programs on ERIS because we're split up by ACGME accreditation. So some of our programs are boarded through the pediatric RRC and some of them are accredited through the EMRRC. So just a plug, because my program is accredited through pediatrics, but we do take EM people. So EM people need to be able to find the program. So that's just one clarification I wanted to offer for Peter. So the average applicant should really look at where they could live. I think that the programs are, in terms of training, you will get good training at any program. You really need to figure out where you want to be and then pick probably a good 10 programs with a good spread that's reasonable. And don't apply to a program that you don't have the desire to live. If you don't like hot weather, do not apply to Florida. That kind of common sense kind of thing. Any other thoughts, guys?
You know, to piggyback, this is where having somebody who's kind of familiar with the match process kind of give you some honest advice. You know, this is true for the residency match as well, but, you know, it really helps, I think, to have somebody who's objective to kind of say, hey, look, you know what, I think you look pretty strong, you know, and you can apply to a few programs, or gosh, you know, maybe you should apply to a few more programs. You know, I think clinical training is now such that really you can get great clinical training at most places. And for those people who can afford to be a little bit more selective, I think the other part of the match process that I think is helpful is to kind of know some of the nuances of the programs that you're interested in. Are you interested in ultrasound, for example? And if you are, then you may want to apply to a pediatric emergency medicine program where there's ultrasound faculty. Or if you're interested in a powered academic career, maybe you want to apply to a program that affords an opportunity to get a master's in clinical research or epidemiology. And so it goes back to the idea of kind of taking a pretty honest look at how competitive you are when you apply and having somebody who's familiar with the process to kind of give you some guidance.
Michelle, why don't you jump in here?
I'm sitting here mesmerized by all of the comments going through. And the problem with this series, frankly, with all the fellowship match advice, is that I kind of want to do all of these fellowships now, and it may be a little bit too late. Although Mabel says that maybe it's not too late. Maybe I can go back and do some of these. So
Michelle, it's
given that, wouldn't that be awesome? I could do a PEM fellowship. So with that in mind,
I'm going to go to your house and talk you out of it later tonight. And now I can.
Challenge accepted. So given that it sounds like a very competitive process, but it is worth it once you get in, you're kind of like the special unicorn that everyone's going to go after in the job market. You know, we advise everyone in our residency programs, particularly like the first or second years who are interested in a PEM fellowship. What makes them stand out? You know, you're reading all of these applications. You say the number of interviews is driven by how good of a fit and competitive you are in this field. What makes people stand out? And I'm curious about the panel. I'm going to start with Maybell first and then Paul and then Peter. And I would love to hear kind of all of your sage wisdom on this. So what makes people competitive for PEM fellowship? Maybell, go.
Okay, a sage statement. It's funny. Interview days are actually really tough because I don't know that you get to see some of the talents come out. So a strong application would include letters from some pediatric attendings, hopefully. But really, more than that, I want to know what people intend to. Well, I guess it's kind of far-sighted, but once you've selected to go into pediatric emergency medicine, I kind of want to know what people want to do with that. And got a little bit of a soapbox here, which is there aren't enough of us in academics to drive the educational movement forward because we really need more PEM expertise in the community. So that's going to be my number one flag. Please sign up to do fellowships. So stand out enthusiasm obviously works well with people, not just kids. I don't particularly think that you have to love kids to be a PEMDOC. And I think people might sort of raise their eyebrows at that one. But you just have to be really good at working with families and being patient. And in fact, sometimes pediatrics is not that much different than actually geriatrics. And strong letters of recommendation. Are you willing to work hard? Because fellowship is not residency. There are elevated responsibilities that you might have in terms of teaching and being a leader. And it's really about leadership development. So I want to see people come in with an idea of leadership.
Paul, any thoughts on this? I feel like if you're a junior resident, you still have some time to change your narrative a little bit as well. So I'm just curious what you would advise people and what makes them competitive.
I think that's fair. One of the things that's unique about pediatric emergency medicine is it really is a hybrid of kind of two primary residency specialties. And so what I'd like to see as a fellowship director and people who apply is some appreciation of that crossover, meaning that if you're an EM resident, I want to see if you're doing a project with somebody on the pediatric side or vice versa. If you're a pediatrics resident, you know, I want to know, gosh, maybe I'm doing some work with an emergency physician. It's really hard to silo yourself as an emergency physician who's done a pediatric emergency medicine fellowship or a pediatrician who's done a pediatric emergency medicine fellowship. Ultimately, I think as a fellowship director, I think many of us kind of view success in training is that when a fellow is done and they're working out wherever they're going to be working, their colleagues don't know if they've trained in pediatrics or emergency medicine. So I think if you are an applicant, you just have to appreciate that, gosh, you're not going to be working with just emergency physicians from this point on if you come from the EM side and vice versa. You know, we want to see that kind of interest. And the truth is, at least for emergency medicine residents, there's a big calculus that goes into this. You're not necessarily going to get paid more as a fellowship trained physician. And so I think fortunately that self-selects people who are interested in kind of this particular specialty. But, you know, we want to see people who've shown, I think, an interest, if not necessarily your first and second year, but some appreciation of a growing level of interest as they progress through residency.
Peter, any thoughts on that? And specifically, Paul mentioned collaborative projects between departments. Does that extend, like, is research going to be an important part of that? Or are we talking about more broader projects like QI type things or education type efforts?
Well, I mean, I think all of that is certainly important. But as far as in the interview process and what we're looking for when we meet people, I think it depends a lot on the program. But for example, our program is very small. As I mentioned, we have one fellow a year, which is really different than where I did my fellowship, where there were five or six fellows a year. So with our program, I think fit with the program is super important. I think it's a two-way street. So we want the person that we successfully match to be very happy with the type of educational program that we have to offer, which in our case is somewhat self-directed and a little bit more open perhaps than some other programs, again, because we have only one fellow a year. The interview process is the opportunity for the program to get to know the applicant and vice versa. And so that's certainly one of the things we try to get to the bottom of in the interview day.
So what I'm understanding from this panel then is to make yourself more competitive, whether you have some time or not that much time to plan your application moving forward is like, one, you got to hate kids, what I got from Maybell. You like to work in groups with potentially other departments showing your negotiation and leadership skills and be okay with no boosted salary and trying to identify if other programs have a similar mission as you as to why you're going into PCM and that might make you competitive in and of itself. That's kind of what I got from that. Is that about right, Sandy?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. All right. Any final comments about the topic before we close this awesome discussion? Free for all. Anybody have a final comment as to the application process or what our candidates should be thinking about?
You know, I do think it's great that people who are watching this videocast or listening to this podcast have kind of gotten to this point. I do think one of the challenges, in particular, EM applicants is trying to find good mentorship, especially when it comes to people who've trained initially in emergency medicine to go into pediatric emergency medicine. So one of the things that I think is sage advice is basically to get educated, you know, listen to these kind of podcasts, reach out to some programs. You know, there are at the various professional organizations, both with the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American College of Emergency Physicians, that, you know, and with EMRA, you know, there are pediatric interest groups where you can kind of get plugged into and kind of meet up with people of similar interests. And I think that's a great venue to try to find people who can help you through this process.
I agree with Paul. I think it's about reaching out to try and find mentors. And with the internet now, it's very easy to connect. Most of us, we love what we do. We're really excited to speak to people who are interested in our programs. So we're only a click away, as long as you can find us.
With that, let's close our discussion and switch gears, Michelle, to our favorite part.
My favorite part. The Magic
Buttons series. There it is. There it is. Our chance to hear a little bit about each of these programs, or for the fellowship directors to sell some candidates on applying this summer in today's upcoming cycle. So let's start with Maybelle. Tell me something I don't know about the program at Inova Fairfax Children's.
Well, it's actually almost 25 years old. We are located just outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia. It's been kind of interesting around here lately. We see about 40,000 kids a year. We have full service, everything that you could hope to want to accomplished in a fellowship. We have simulation, we have exposure to EMS, we have lots of great clinical experiences. I currently have 5 fellows total. It's because I take both tracks, so it'll be always different on a year-to-year basis. I've got about 10 PEM-boarded emergency physicians at my shop, so we don't have full fellowship lines. So again, our fellows do get to function in a higher capacity. I offer a mini residency in pediatrics, so some of my fellows are surprised to see that they have to have floor experience, but I think that in learning about that for peds is probably very, very important if you haven't had it already. And we do offer the ability to moonlight as well, which is, you know, something that makes fellowship a little bit sweeter at the end.
All right, Paul, tell us something that I don't know about UC San Diego's program.
Yeah, so our program has been accredited since 1995, and we actually started off as a program that initially just took emergency medicine graduates. And we are an academic fellowship within the Department of Emergency Medicine at the University of California, San Diego, but our clinical operations and where we see the patients is at the Children's Hospital, the Rady Children's Hospital in San Diego. We are the only pediatric hospital for the 8th largest metropolitan area in the United States. You know, so our catchment area is huge. We go from the Mexican border to the Arizona border to Orange County. And so we see something along the lines of 92,000-94,000 patients per year. One of the things that I think stands out about our particular program is that we've really had a long track record of integrating emergency medicine, pediatrics, and working that together. For example, you know, as a fellowship director, I trained in emergency medicine. Our division chief is somebody who trained initially in emergency medicine and pediatric emergency medicine. I think we have 6 or 7 of our 30 faculty trained initially in emergency medicine. So I think, honestly, that without sounding too self-serving, I think that's really a valuable part of a fellow's education, especially if you are trained initially in pediatrics. I think it's helpful to kind of get the perspective of somebody who's initially trained in emergency medicine. And vice versa, you know, for our EM applicants, you know, we're housed at the largest children's hospital on the West Coast. Of course, you get exposure to all the pediatric subspecialists. And so it's nice that way. You know, our hospital sees a mixture of both primary and tertiary care. And so there's subspecialty backup for really all of our patients, but it's not a fellowship-driven hospital in the sense that as somebody who works in the emergency department, I pretty much have full reign to initiate the care, manage the patient, and maybe at the very end of that, I'll call the subspecialist and let them know that, hey, this is kind of what I did for your patient, as opposed to getting a phone call from a super subspecialist and saying, hey, look, this patient's coming in. This is what I want you to do. This. Don't screw it up and call me before you do anything. So it's nice because there's some leeway for our fellows to kind of practice independently. And finally, we do integrate some continued emergency medicine, general emergency medicine exposure. We allow for either moonlighting for our 3-year graduates, or if you are a 4-year graduate, there are potentially opportunities to function as an attending physician within the Department of Emergency Medicine at UCSD. We take between 2 and 3. So like Maybelle, because we have both pediatric and EM trained fellows, our total complement can vary. This very moment, we have 5. Next year, we'll have 8, just given the vagaries of kind of the duration of training. Sure. But yeah, so usually between 2 and 3 fellows a year.
So Peter, last one up, you get to say the final word and add all the things that your other panelists forgot to say. And I'm going to tell you in the sense of tell me something I don't know about your fellowship. I was just in your beautiful pediatric emergency department with the very nice lighting and the moon music, and it was serenity. It was lovely. So tell me something I don't know about OHSD.
Sure. So clearly we have the newest program of all the ones here. We graduated our first fellow in 2012. And we seek to have a mixture of EM and pediatric trainees as well. And what I think is unique about our program here is we're actually a cooperative venture between the two children's hospitals in Portland. So at OHSU is a very academically oriented subspecialty children's hospital based in the emergency medicine department. And then the other health system involved is a legacy health system, which built Randall Children's Hospital and opened it in 2012, the same year we graduated our first fellow. It's a freestanding 9-story children's hospital with every subspecialty. And the emergency department there is also beautiful. It's the entire ground floor of the hospital. There's 22 beds. Our current volumes there are upwards of 30,000 now. And so what that means for fellows, in my opinion, is that the fellows in our program really get exposure to two very different types of faculty and different clinical environments. For example, the pediatric emergency medicine group at Randall Children's is mostly pediatrics trained, whereas many of the ones at OHSU are emergency medicine trained. That also allows quite a range of options as far as mentorship goes. The faculty at Randall Children's tend to be more community tertiary care, but community oriented as opposed to the academic faculty at OHSU. So there's ample mentorship opportunities for research as well as for clinical practice. Also at OHSU, we're offering a combined ultrasound and pediatric emergency medicine fellowship, which may be of interest to especially the pediatrics trained folks, but the emergency medicine trained folks as well. We also have easy moonlighting for emergency medicine trained folks in the OHSU ED. So I really think it's the dual institution model that's the real strength of our program, as well as Portland, Oregon, which is a beautiful place to be. Unlike what people often say, the weather is very, very sunny here much of the year, as right now.
Well, the view doesn't stink up on that hill. It's quite beautiful. So thanks to our panelists, Michelle. Final comments?
No, this is wonderful. After I look into the toxicology fellowship, I am totally on top of this PEM fellowship. I think that's
done,
next on my list.
Right after ultrasound. Forgot. You
right? Oh, I forgot about that one. After ultrasound. That one.
Right. All right. Come thanks, on. Everyone. We will see you next time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Emergency Medicine Match Advice. You can view any of our episodes for free on Allium's YouTube channel, or if you prefer, listen to the episodes as Allium podcasts on SoundCloud. Also, check out summaries of our episodes as blog posts on Allium.com and in the publication A User's Guide to the Allium EM Match Advice series in the June 2017 issue of the Western Journal of Emergency Medicine. We love to hear from our listeners. Post your questions or comments for any of our episodes on Allium.com. Thanks for joining us.